Okay, the recorder's on. This is World Affairs Monthly, and I have Mr. Jeffrey R. Nyquist on the line. Of course, he goes as Jeff Nyquist. He's a rather accomplished expert on international affairs and, of course, the Cold War. And I've known him, well, we were first acquainted about 20 years ago, and I just thought of him tonight and last night, I mean, last night, that is, because of what's going on in Ukraine, of course. And Jeff has a blog, obviously probably a popular blog, jrnyquist.blog, and that's jrnyquist.blog. Sorry, Jeff. All right, so, you know, Jeff, I find it really incredible that you and I are talking after all these years, because I'm just going to introduce this. It's going to be a bit bizarre, but I realize that you are convinced that the war is coming to the United States, right? And I believe it will be nuclear. I think that I'm going to say it right now. No one's going to believe me, but I'm going to even name the cities that are going to be nuked by Russia. Mm-hmm. San Francisco, okay. Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and New York. They will be completely rebelized. Tens of millions of people will be killed. And I think Putin knows this. He's preparing for it. And they're going to go in the bunkers. And they don't care about mutual assured destruction. They don't care. This is the end of the world. That's my thesis. And I find it unbelievable that I'm talking to you, because I don't know, many years ago when we first talked, I knew you were, you know, I liked you a lot. I thought your ideas were cool. You were sticking to the communism stuff, which I think made some sense. But I also realized that you and I agree totally that the Cold War didn't end. This is a continuation of the Cold War. And that Francis Fukuyama, the end of history, is kind of kooky. You know, it's just kooky stuff. So it's great to have you on the line, and I'm just wondering what you're going to say about this thing. But, you know, one final thought here, and maybe people are going to get upset at me, but the Ashkenazi Jews who were in the Pale of the Settlement for a couple hundred years, you know, they were pushed east from more Western Europe because people didn't like them. They got a hold of the Russian government. You know, they killed the Russian monarchy. You know, they murdered a lot of people. Solzhenitsyn says they murdered probably 6 million people, kulaks, or, you know, bourgeoisie type. And now Russia is really just totally removed from the bourgeois life. We are totally bourgeois here in the Western world. China is not bourgeois. So China and Russia are rising as non-bourgeois. And I'm afraid that it's the end of the bourgeois world. It's a cycle of life. It's the end. I would say that within 20 years, I won't be shocked if 90% of the human population is killed, gone, dead. So that's my thesis. And I thought, hey, it's going to be fun to talk to Jeff.
Have you read Solzhenitsyn's book, 200 Years Together?
I haven't read it. But I've seen, you know, it's not, Ashkenazi Jews in the United States won't let it be published in English, translated. So I
well,
like
it. A large part of it has been translated. I have a copy of it.
Oh, you do?
Look, Solzhenitsyn corrects, this is what Solzhenitsyn says, and he's pretty careful in his research.
Yeah.
Solzhenitsyn says, the Bolshevik Revolution was not Jewish. That's not true. He said what happened was in the Bolshevik Revolution, there was a strike by Bolshevik government members, by people in the bureaucracy at one point in the early Bolshevik days, and they didn't know what to do. The government of Lenin needed to get rid of the strikers, and of course, the only available pool, since Jews were kind of eschewed, the only available pool of educated people that could fill those spots were Jews.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought a lot of Jews into the administration, into mid-level bureaucratic positions, to break the strike.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Jews got into the Bolshevik government.
I see.
But they were not the majority. I mean, this idea that the majority of the leaders of the Bolshevik government were Jewish, you just do
Well, they were the literate people, so it makes sense that they were...
Well, they were literate Russians, too. I mean, Lenin was a literate Russian.
But I understand that, not to interrupt, but I understand that most of the senior leaders of the Cheka were Jewish. I'm pretty sure that's correct.
The two senior leaders of the Cheka, Felix Dzerzhinsky and Menzhinsky, were Polish.
Okay.
They weren't Jewish. They were Polish aristocrats.
Well, Trotsky was Jewish. And Zinoviev is Jewish.
Yeah, but Stalin, basically had Trotsky assassinated.
Yeah, he did.
Kamenev and Zinoviev were murdered imprisoned and murdered.
I think Stalin was, of course, accepting of the Ashkenazi Jews at first, but then he wanted to annihilate them. That would be my guess. But look, you're the expert in this. But
Bolshevism is not a racial doctrine. I mean...
It's not. But here in the United States, Jeff.
The view of the communists, of the Jews, look, if you look at the Communist Party, it's a worldwide movement. There's all kinds of different groups in it.
Absolutely, yes.
But they're not just Jews. Look, the head of the some of the more influential people in the Communist Party USA were Finnish.
Yeah.
And the reason is that the whites won the Finnish Civil War. The Reds fled. Some of them fled here to America, ended up in the Communist Party USA. Well, Gus Hall, longtime head of the Communist Party USA, was a Finnish
American.
All right. Right?
All right, sure. It attracts everybody. Now, Jacob Schiff was a German Jew in New York City, and he funded the Bolshevik Revolution.
No, he did not.
Really?
Absolutely not true.
Okay.
You're
expert, so I was told that he did.
No, he didn't. Henry Ford claimed that.
Oh, I see.
And in 1920... people in Jacob Schiff's family said, you should sue him. Jacob Schiff was a very influential, sort of the leader of the West, the Jews.
Yeah.
In a lot of Jewish international organizations. And in fact, when the Bolshevik Revolution happened, mm-hmm. he said, we do not dare support the Bolsheviks. They're destroying Jewish businesses.
Okay.
We are supporting the whites. And he got these Jewish organizations. They supported Admiral Kolchak of the White Army. They did not, and this is a fact. Mm-hmm. Yet Henry Ford made this claim to the Dearborn Observer that Jacob Schiff had supported it. And you had all these people making this claim, and it wasn't true. And Jacob Schiff's relative said, why don't you sue him? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, I'm not going to sue him. Well, he died of a heart attack. I think it was a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And his relatives then proceeded to sue Henry Ford in the 1920s. I think it was like 1925 or 6. Mm-hmm. They sued him and they went in court. Henry Ford had to publicly apologize for those accusations.
Mm-hmm.
They were proved wrong in a court of law.
Mm. Okay.
So it just simply, this is an unfortunate thing that's been claimed that is not true.
Now, the New York Times, however, Sulzberger family, Ashkenazi Jews, I think from Germany or maybe from Russia, from the Pale, they were pro-Stalin, they were pro-Bolshevism. And let me read you something. I assume it's correct, but I don't know. Maybe you're going to correct me. Quote unquote, this is Solzhenitsyn, probably from the 200 years together. You must understand the leading Bolsheviks who took over Russia were not Russians. They hated Russians. They hated Christians. Driven by ethnic hatred, they tortured and slaughtered millions of Russians without a shred of human remorse. It cannot be overstated. Bolshevism committed the greatest human slaughter of all time. The fact that most of the world is ignorant and uncaring about this enormous crime is proof that the global media is in the hands of the perpetrators.
Now, where is this from?
I don't know. I found it.
See, when you read actually Solzhenitsyn's words, you don't find that quote is framed in such a way that it implies it's Jews.
Yes, he's suggesting.
And
he's
got to understand, if you read that, you don't find that he's not accusing the Jews. What he says, in fact, is that this hatred between Russians and Jews, is unfortunate, sad, and there's wrong on both sides.
Okay, fine.
Right.
Well, as usual, Jeff. Right. I mean, when there's war, people, misunderstandings can get out of hand.
But he's very clear in that the Jews only came into the Bolshevik administration later,
mm-hmm.
and that Stalin, of course, was not Russian. He was Georgian.
Yes, of course.
right?
No, he was tortured.
And
yes.
You had, and Menzinski and Dzerzhinsky were not Russian, they were Polish.
Yeah.
So this may be very well what he's explaining. The heads of Poland and the heads of the administration,
yeah,
administrative organs, were not actually Russians.
Right.
But it doesn't mean they were Jews.
No, okay.
There were other minorities from the Russian Empire who hated the greater Russians.
Well, it's a little bit more complex than we all realize, obviously. Okay, now, just to quickly say, the Democratic Party here in the United States is largely funded by Ashkenazi Jews, you know, Americans, and they're pretty much veering toward Bolshevism. Is that not true?
Well, there's Jews that are against the Democratic Party. You know, when you say Jews, you mean all Jews.
Well, okay.
Or just a few. You know,
yes, a few, Jeff. A few.
Say,
I'm not, but they typically
Americans
vote Democrat.
The Communist Party, you know, well, some Finnish Americans support it.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
You have to be very careful. I mean, you look at Diana West. Diana West is Ashkenazi Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's anti-communist, anti-Democratic Party to the
ball. Yeah,
to
yeah, yeah. Of course,
Merrill, right?
Of course, yes.
So what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Is Bill Clinton Jewish?
No,
is
no, of
Barack
course
Obama
not.
Jewish?
No, of course
is,
not.
Joe Biden Jewish? No.
Well, in Biden's administration, we were heavy presence of Ashkenazi Jews. In fact, Tony Blinken, I know the guy. His stepfather is Samuel Pizar, P-I-S-A-R, probably Mossad in Paris. I was friends with him for 40 years. And he claimed he was a survivor of Auschwitz as a teenager. And Sam and I were good friends. I never met his stepson. He didn't mention him once, ever. But, you know, the stepson is probably Mossad. That is, you know, he is. No, but let's get on to, we can do another, you know, in a week or so or whenever you want, we can get into this because this is very interesting. Obviously, the Jews and the Ashkenazi Jews and the Russians have a very complex relationship. And I agree with you. Maybe there's a lot of bad blood, but, you know, things can be overcome. Is that right?
Well, you're talking about one ethnic difference among many ethnic differences.
Yeah.
May not even be the most important one.
Yeah.
As a factor here.
Yeah.
And the big ethnic difference we're dealing with now is the one between Russians and Ukrainians.
Right.
And of course, it's a question of whether Ukraine is a nation. And of course, the Jews have nothing to do with this question. This is a Russian-Ukrainian issue.
Well, the Pale of the Settlement included most of Ukraine and, of course, Poland. You know what the Pale of the Settlement is. So,
uh-huh.
So the Ashkenazi Jews were a large portion of the of historical Ukraine. In fact, I didn't know this until recently. A friend of mine who helps me with research told me, "Tom, you don't know this, probably, do you?" He said the Ottoman Empire controlled most of Ukraine for about 100 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And not many people know that. So obviously these subjects are, you know, these topics, subject, whatever you want to call them, they're pretty complex. So the ties between Ukraine and the Islamic world are quite strong. In fact, Turkey and Ukraine have very strong ties. And in fact, the drones that Turkey is making, a lot of the parts, the engines, come from factories in Ukraine. Amazing,
mm-hmm.
Right? So, and the Ashkenazi Jews were heavily dominating Ukraine, and it's quite amazing to you. Maybe they're not even Ashkenazi in some way, because that implies they're European. They could be Sephardi. I don't know. I mean, life.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, you're talking about a tiny minority that maybe they have influence out of proportion of their numbers. But
yeah.
They don't. They're not decisive for Europe.
Okay.
Look, when Hitler could not have rounded them all up, taken their property, put them in camps,
mm-hmm.
if they had been all that powerful.
Well, they were small in numbers. They controlled the German banks. They did control the German banks, and.
But not all the banks.
No, not all of them.
No,
but
they had
were.
Their banks.
Actually, Jeff, it's what I understand. Maybe you can correct me, but in the 20s in Germany, they were very worried about Bolshevism. And I think it was Zinoviev, I think first name Alexander, maybe? I'm not sure. He was Jewish, of course, Ashkenazi Jew. And he was implicated in a couple of very serious coup attempts against the German government, you know, bringing down the Weimar Republic. And it was very serious. And in 1922, I think it was, my memory is still pretty good.
Wasn't doing that as a Jew. He was the head of the Communist International.
Yeah, of course. But there were prominent Jews around Lenin who were doing this. And so...
But Lenin didn't mainly have Jews around him. He had more non-Jews than Jews around him.
Okay, fine. But Walter Rathenau was an Ashkenazi Jew there in Germany, coming from a very prominent family, very wealthy family, and they were socialists. And they were basically very sympathetic to Russia. And the bourgeoisie in Bavaria was pretty upset about this because Walter Rathenau was foreign minister, and he was assassinated in 1922. So I'm just going to say, yes, very complex, but I'm going to say that probably the origins of World War II could be traced to the fear of Christian Europe that Ashkenazi Jews were basically communists and sympathizing very deeply with the Bolshevik Revolution and Soviet Union. That's what I'm going to say. And there's a lot of archival evidence that that's the case, because many of the speeches that Hitler gave were not necessarily focused on the so-called evil of Jews or their inability to live in peace with the Germans, but they were talking, you know, these Nazis were talking about the damn threat from the East. Now also, you know, what's really interesting, and it's not well known, Jeff, this is really interesting, you know, Napoleon's armies liberated most, if not all, of the a lot of the ghettos that the Jews were living in, you know, in Europe, Western Europe. And so once the Jews were liberated, you know, things were pretty good and things were taking off. Everybody was cool. But it turns out, and I got this, I read this, one of the history books that I have written by a Jew, way back when, I don't can't remember now, but you can check up on this, but this is entirely true. So in the second half of the 19th century, you know, starting around maybe 1870s or so, there was a group of, in Bavaria, there was a group of, you know, extreme right or right-wing men that were thinking, all right, these Jews are a pain in the ass. We have to, you know, maybe strip them of their civil rights or some of their civil rights. And they put, there was a big enough movement to put the vote to a referenda, you know, like they do in Switzerland now. And they would have these votes, and generally speaking, the German people, you know, there in southern Europe, Bavaria, were opposed to that kind of extreme reaction. Although there was definitely a lot of support for the proposals, but they said, no, we don't want to do that because that's too extreme. And they were voted down. But of course, all it took was the depression, economic depression, that started to sweep the United States and Europe to trigger, you know, more and more anger. And then, of course, that German government, the Weimar Republic, didn't last too long. And what's really amazing is that I talked to a historian one time, a long time ago, and he said, you know, there was evidence of a pretty good feeling about everything. Between Jews and Germans, everything was going well in the 20s. And, you know, there was some upheaval. There was a group of people, like I said, where Rathenau was assassinated, but it was thought to be extremists. And this guy said that had you interviewed people on the street in, say, Munich or wherever, southern Germany, in the 20s, and you told them a guy like Adolf Hitler would come to power in 1933, they would have thought you were crazy. Right.
Yeah. Right. And have you read Mein Kampf?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, let me remind you of what he says in there.
Okay. Please
do. If you read Mein Kampf very carefully.
Yeah.
Hitler says, "You know, there's a problem because Germany has had so many enemies. Look at World War One.
Yeah.
They fought the Italians, the French, the British, the Russians, the Romanians, the Americans, right?
Yeah.
So they're fighting all these countries. He said, you can't tell the Germans that they have all these enemies, all these people that hate them.
Yeah.
You have to reduce Germany's enemies to one enemy. That doesn't seem too scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way you can unite Germany.
Focus. You could focus, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So then so he was very cynically explaining in the book why the Jews, you resolve all enemies into the Jews. So he said, here's how you do it.
Well, Jews were transnational.
Well, no. Just listen to what he's saying.
Okay.
Here. So it's very cynical. So you call the Bolsheviks Jews, and so you go to the wealthy Germans, mm-hmm. the German industrialists and bankers and stuff, and you say, we're opposing Jewish Bolshevism.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then
you win
over the industrialists, and you win over the German aristocracy. That's and the Junkers, the officers' class, and the generals in the army, mm-hmm. by saying, "Look, Jewish Bolshevism is our enemy."
Okay.
And then,
well,
when you hold on, there's two parts to this. Then you go to the workers, who are all upset at the way they're being treated by the industrialists and the aristocrats, and you say, "Look, your enemy is Western Jewish finance capital out of New York and London."
Mm-hmm.
And so now you can unite Germany, saying they only have one enemy,
mm-hmm.
and it's the Jews, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Jewish Bolshevism, Jewish finance capitalism. Now, that's really very funny, because the Bolsheviks want to overthrow capitalism,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So it's a myth. They're claiming that capitalism is a Jewish conspiracy and that communism is a Jewish conspiracy.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
neither of which is true, by the way.
Right.
Capitalism is not a Jewish conspiracy.
No.
And communism is not a Jewish conspiracy.
Well, Karl Marx was Ashkenazi Jew.
But he wasn't Jewish. He was raised a Christian. His mother converted before his birth.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, he was not an Orthodox Jew.
He was a Christian as a young kid. He was a Christian.
Yeah.
And it's only when he went to college and he lost his Christianity, he developed these other ideas, which, by the way, are not, you know, Hegel is not a Jew. Taking Hegel and turning him upside down is not Jewish.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Yeah.
Right. Dialectical materialism isn't any more. And in fact, Karl Marx wrote on the Jewish question, in which he basically attacked the Jews.
Yes, he
viciously.
Did. Yes.
There's nothing in his writings against Judaism that you don't find in Hitler's, followers.
Yeah,
in fact, anti-Semitism is the stupid man's Bolshevism. I mean, that's been said before. Because basically what you do is you create a caricature of the greedy Jew, and that's your capitalist.
Yeah.
So that's your anti-capitalism turned into an ethnic hatred for people really who aren't very literate and who are just, working men.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a very simplistic form of anti-capitalism.
But Rathenau and these Bavarian Jews, they were for raising taxes. They were sympathetic to, they were socialists. They were communists, see. They wanted to raise property taxes.
Or were they social democrats?
Well, okay, maybe. I'm not the expert you are, and I have to go back to my history books. But apparently the biggest problem was the Jews were getting into local governments, municipal governments, and they would constantly advocate for higher property tax. That was one of the biggest problems. And the Christian Bavarians were just going fucking nuts about that, you see. So again, I think, ideas can spread quickly and become fashionable. And I don't know, I'm ready to accept the reality that you can't condemn all Jews, obviously, right? But here we have this Ukraine crisis. The United States is heavily controlled by Ashkenazi Jews. The media is controlled.
Oh, I'm sorry, what? The United States is controlled by Jews?
Oh, of course. Come on, Jeff. I mean,
really?
Blinken is Ashkenazi Jewish. And I know for a fact.
Well, because some government official is Jewish doesn't mean they control the United States.
Well,
surely.
If I put up.
I mean,
okay,
look,
for example,
Jeff. prominent people with British heritage or prominent people with German-American heritage. You know, look, George Bush, that's a German name. His son, you know, George W. Bush were presidents. You know, does that mean that there's a German conspiracy and the Germans
control
America?
No, it doesn't.
You know, people made fun of Nixon. You know, you had Haldeman and Ehrlichman and the Germans, right?
Mm-hmm.
So was there a German conspiracy in Watergate? I mean, we got to be serious here. We're a lot of different ethnic groups.
Of course.
Why would you say that one particular ethnic group controls?
Okay, the New York Times is Jewish.
Yeah.
And, for example, I was just on Nextdoor. You know, I have Nextdoor.com.
Or it's owned by a Jewish guy.
No, Nextdoor.com. And I don't know who's the owner now, but a woman named Sarah Freiley is the CEO. And I don't know who's the owner. But get this. I made a critical comment about Israel. And somebody complained, and they shut me down they suspended me for 1 month. And,
if you say some of the things you're saying here, you can understand.
No. We have a First Amendment. We have a First Amendment. No, most of the media is controlled by Jews, and they're mostly very uncritical of Israel. In fact, they're very supportive of Israel.
Fox News isn't owned by Jews, and I don't think CNN is either.
No, but they're Zionist. There's on it. For example, this Tucker Carlson, I saw you mention him. He started talking about, the fact that the border south of us, you know, with Mexico, is being, you know, overrun by mestizos from Central America, maybe Mexico too, and the Jews in America, most of them left wing, are really kind of favoring, you know, effectively an open border, whereas the Republicans want to close it down as Trump proposed, and the ADL got really upset about Tucker Carlson because Tucker Carlson says Jews in the United States are all for this multi-ethnic, multi-racial world, and in Israel they have this hyper-ethnic state where only Jews can live. You know? So they're promoting, he said this, and he was nearly shut down. So I don't know, Jeff. I mean, obviously.
Well, I mean, if you were a, we don't want to get into the details of history, but the Jews were a pariah people in the ancient world.
Yes.
Okay. Many people don't know that. Why were they a pariah people? Because the Greeks and the Romans and the Phoenicians and, all the other peoples of the ancient world, you know, the Germans and the Celt-Iberians and the Numidians and you name them, the Britons,
right.
They were all pagans.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, and the Jews had this idea of a god. Okay.
The monotheists, right? Their god's day was Saturday, so some of them said, they worship Saturn, right?
Right.
And of course, their big day was, you know, Sunday. Right.
So, okay, fine. I got you.
So there were the pariah people, and the Jews revolted very violently, you know?
Yeah.
When Nero was emperor there around 70 AD, there was a big revolt in Judea, and the emperor Vespasian came out right there to smash it. You had a whole Roman legion get slaughtered there in that battle.
Right.
And you had the siege of Jerusalem. That's when the temple was destroyed.
Yeah.
In Jerusalem, that's why the temple is not there now.
Mm-hmm.
Vespasian's son, Titus Vespasian, he destroyed the temple
mm-hmm.
when the siege of Jerusalem ended, and the Jews were partly partly dispersed, they were suppressed then,
mm-hmm.
and then later there was a rebellion. I think when Trajan died and the Emperor Hadrian came in,
mm-hmm.
there was the Jews. I think they got control of Cyprus, and there was a massive war then, a massive slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because of the diaspora, Jews had spread. You know, because of the Babylonian captivity,
mm-hmm.
because Israel had been conquered a number of times, there were Jewish communities all over the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were everywhere, and they were considered to be a
dispersed
development.
They were dispersed, yes.
They were dispersed. And, of course, the Jewish diaspora goes back to those earlier conquests of it. But then later they were just expelled mm-hmm. by the Romans from their homeland.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to live everywhere else. as a pariah people,
right,
to maintain their traditions. And so as a pariah people living in this pagan world, they were thought to be a subversive element because they didn't share in their religion, so they were persecuted.
Sure enough.
So they couldn't participate in the normal patterns of life. Mm-hmm. They had to develop their own ways of surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then later, when the Roman Empire became Christian, the Christians had, the Jews were the had rejected Christ, and they were the crucifiers of Christ, according to, you look at the Gospels, that's what it says.
Mm-hmm.
So then they were a pariah people still under Christianity, even though Christ was a Jew. So so this continued then on into the Middle Ages. So this is the background of a people that don't have a homeland, who have to live everywhere. So if you're a people who don't have a homeland and have to live everywhere,
mm-hmm.
how do you survive? You survive by you want to prevent people from restricting your ability to move and live everywhere because that's how you've survived.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's not a particular conspiracy.
Okay,
it's a survival strategy of a people, so it's not particularly cynical. You know, I mean, do you subscribe to the idea that the Jews are trying to take over the world? Do you believe that?
Well, all I can say is, they have a lot of power. Yeah, they have a lot of power. And
subscribe to that theory. See that.
Well, I think they probably are megalomaniacs. There's a guy up the street, a Jewish guy, and we don't necessarily get along with him, but you know, he's a decent chap. He's a professor at Sonoma State in political science, and he's basically a communist, and he wants to take guns away from Americans, and he's all for high property. He's all for high taxes.
Is he a Jew?
Yes, he's Jewish.
How can he be a Jew if he's a...
He's asking us, he's Jew.
If you're a communist, you're rejecting God, and that means you're rejecting the God of the Old Testament and Bible, and then you're not really Jewish anymore.
That's true.
So that's an important thing to make. Is that once you accept the new religion of socialism or communism, you're no longer a Jew.
That's true. I suppose that's accurate.
And as far as this, look, are we going to hate the French? Because there was a French Empire, and they ruled a lot of countries.
Yeah.
And they were pretty ruthless.
Yeah, they were.
You know, they ruled a lot of places in Africa and the Western Hemisphere, and they had French Indochina. And then you got the British Empire.
Yeah.
So you got people right now today that they're always afraid of a British conspiracy or a French conspiracy.
Yeah,
you got
people
in Africa.
Yeah.
I knew a guy, an African guy. He was from... what was the country he was from? I'm not remembering right now. But he was, he spoke fluent French, and he spoke really good English, and he really was paranoid of the French.
Yeah, sure, sure.
You know, because it was his country, it was a French
colony. Because the French exploited West Africa very, very, very...
Right, so you have these histories of ethnic rivalries and beliefs that other people are trying to take advantage. So you got to be careful, though.
Yeah.
Because it isn't really true that the French are conspiring all the time and the British are conspiring or the Jews are conspiring. It's not really true.
Okay, in 2003.
It's just a fragment of history.
Yes.
It's a partial truth.
Yes, it is. It is. I grant you that. You're very eloquent and articulate, and you're great, Jeff. Now, in 2003 and 2004, I happened to be able to interview the founders of Hamas over the telephone. And they were friends of mine, and the Israeli government assassinated them immediately afterwards. All we were talking about was the future of Palestine, you know, and I don't think they didn't say on... I have the recordings. I'm going to republish them. I'm sure you would find them interesting. They were good guys. All they were doing was explaining how, in fact, both of them, the two guys that were assassinated, were decent chaps. And the third man, I didn't get a chance to talk to him. He was the old man and the founder in a wheelchair, Ahmed Yassin. And they were going to organize the interview with me, but he didn't speak English very well, or he didn't speak at all. And so they would have to do a translation, and it was going to be difficult. But they were organizing it, but the Israelis didn't take any chances, and they killed him too before I could talk to him. So I don't know, Jeff. I mean, I think...
Well, look, the Arabs conquered many people.
Yes, they did, with violence.
To a Persian woman, a woman of Persian heritage, amazing appearance. She had green eyes.
Yeah.
And she talked about the suffering that she suffered from Islam.
Yes, of course.
What the Arabs had
done. I'm not saying that. Well, of course,
people.
Jeff.
Look, So they conquered, and they tortured, and they murdered. So all these conquering peoples and their legacies.
Yes.
And then the Arabs are resentful because the British and French came in and occupied them, and the Turks occupied them. And
yes. One after another. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so we're going to hold on to these.
No, we're not, Jeff. We're not.
Right.
No, you're right. We're not. In fact, that's the point of calling you, because I thought, you know, we're going to be once again bound to these ethnic hatreds, right? We are bound to some degree, right? I mean, can we just forget the Cold War, or is it just going to continue?
Well, the Cold War is not. See, you got these. You got a new religion. You got a new religion here, and it's socialism. It's communism. We don't know what its final form will be like.
Okay.
Now, how do I describe it? I'll give you an example. At the end of the Roman Empire, you had the emergence of a new religion.
Mm-hmm.
In the last century of the Roman Empire, you had the emergence of Christianity.
Right.
When I mean the last century, I mean the fourth century. Mm-hmm. The fourth century was really the last century. I mean, it was like 11 years after that century that Rome was sacked for the first time by the Ostrogoths, I think, were the ones that actually sacked it. So you've got this Roman Empire, and it's pagan, but then all of a sudden this new religion emerges.
Mm-hmm.
And that new religion emerged, it was, as Max Weber shows, it was an urban phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Paul was a tent maker. Christ was a carpenter. These are urban professions.
Mm-hmm.
You have a
bourgeoisie?
Right. Well,
yeah.
Exactly. I mean, Christianity is the religion of the bourgeoisie.
Yes, it is.
Of the middle class.
Yeah.
It's,
okay, it is.
It's very much goes
a more
along with it.
A more sophisticated.
And in fact,
Jeff.
In fact, the word pagan means ignorant country dweller.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you have the ignorant country dwellers, the pagans, and their cities are being taken over by the Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And the Christians are slowly taking over the administration of the empire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like this inevitable thing,
mm-hmm.
that this new religion, of course, here you have an empire that was founded on pagan ideas and values,
mm-hmm.
being taken over by Christians who reject those values and that arrangement.
Yeah.
And by the way, the empire was not going to survive that change.
No, it wasn't.
Now,
you know, Edward Gibbon described Gibbon said that one of the reasons the empire was undermined and destroyed was because of Christianity.
Yeah, he was said to make that case. He was a little more subtle and nuanced than that.
Okay.
But anyway, it's basically true that Christianity represented the undermining of Christian values.
Yes.
Of pagan values,
of course. But you know,
I haven't really made the point.
Okay.
Now I want you to fast forward to today.
Okay, sure. Yeah,
we have a new
religion
called socialism. Okay?
Yeah.
Now you look at the cities. The cities are blue. It's not blue state, red state. It's blue cities. You look at a map of who voted for the Democrats and who voted for the Republicans.
Yes, it's outstanding.
The countryside is red, right?
Yeah.
So we have this word called redneck, right?
Right.
And a redneck is just a Christian, an ignorant country dweller who believes in Christianity, right?
Yeah.
So the pagans of today are the redneck Christians who live in the countryside over in flyover territory.
There's
right?
truth to that. There's truth
and
to
so
that.
And so New York, and so wait a minute. This is exactly the same process because
the new religion
is taking over in the urban areas.
Yes.
It's taken over the administrative, all of the administrative staff, the universities, the government ministries, or, you know, the government bureaus. They're all being taken over by these people as a process. Identical basic processes happened in the late Roman Empire.
I totally agree,
Jeff. Happening to us, right?
Yes.
So now the Christians are the pagans.
Yes.
The pagans were the ignorant country dwellers in the 4th century A.D., and the Christians are now the ignorant country dwellers, the rednecks, in the 21st century A.D.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this process. This is what's really happening.
Yeah.
It's not about Jews. It's not about Russians or Chinese or any ethnicity.
No, that's the overall thesis,
It's about a change in the basic religious or cosmological, right? Because socialism is a new religion without God.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it? It's basically, they could end up infusing some kind of mysticism in it, but it's basically materialistic in outlook, that it's a materialist ontology, that mm-hmm. is, they believe that this is the only life. Mm-hmm. And because they believe that our physical existence is the only real existence, that there is no afterlife, there is no God. I mean, this is basic to Marxism. They believe that it is up to us to use politics to make heaven on earth through government, through human power, which is political power. Mm-hmm. And that is what the Democratic Party is trying to do. Mm-hmm. That is what the Communist Chinese Party is trying to do. It's what Putin is trying to do, and because he's really a communist. He's not a Russian nationalist. Mm-hmm. You can ask a real...
You think he's a communist? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, he's a communist.
Okay.
There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that doubts it just hasn't studied him. I mean,
okay.
The first thing...
No, I
it's what he really believes. He can't say it because of the nature of the black mark on communism,
because
of what it did.
But, Jeff, how can he be a communist when the communist philosophy or ideology led to the collapse of his Soviet Union? How could he believe that? I mean,
well,
you know, it's so...
Did you hear his speech Monday?
I didn't hear it. No, I read parts of it.
He said the collapse of the Soviet Union and the separation of the republics was illegal.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's basically affirming the Soviet Union is his country.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and so if he's saying that, that's, and first of all, he has said, you know, people say he's a Christian and he wears a cross. He says, well, Christ was basically saying the same thing as Lenin and Marx.
I see. Yeah.
He said that multiple times. I've
right.
watched him in his town hall meetings. I've watched him say it.
Okay.
So there's, you know, and it's like, well, Colonel Stanislav Luniv, when I was on a TV show and I didn't know Luniv was going to be on it. I knew him. He was a defector from the GRU, and I said, you know, they put us on a speaker because he was coming to the show by phone, and I said, oh, Stan. He said, oh, Jeff, I didn't know you were going to be on. And I said, well, what do you, you know, and the audience, live audience, was sort of hearing the call because they had it on the speaker.
Yeah.
And I said, so what do you think of Putin? And he said, right there, he said, he's a communist.
Yeah, really, okay.
Well, and I said, well, you know, he says, well, I'm from St. Petersburg. You know, I'm from Leningrad, and he is. So I know his milieu. I know where he's from. I know who he is.
Well, his background is lower income, you know, obviously. And anyway, most of the bourgeoisie was killed off.
Putin's grandfather was the most trusted person in Stalin's staff.
Really?
Yeah, because his grandfather, see, Stalin had three chefs, three cooks.
Okay.
Two were Chinese and only one was Russian. Stalin didn't really trust Russians, but he trusted Putin's grandfather.
I see. That's interesting.
Because remember, they're feeding him.
Yeah.
And so Stalin was a feared poisoning.
Yeah, of course. You know what, Jeff? I'm realizing I think what I want to do is we stop it right here and I call you back because I'm not sure I can record. Anyway, people are they're going to see 50 minutes and they're not going to want to listen. Yeah, really. I know it's psychological.
Yeah.
So why don't we do this? I'm going to hang up and I'll call you back in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
All right.